you know any places any Sega nerds hang out around here?
Welcome to the Sega Nerdcast, episode 57. With me this week, we have a couple special guests joining the podcast. We have Hugh Johnson from the Retro League podcast.
Let's get ready to rumble.
And then we also have Brett from our buds at Sega Addicts.
Too sweet me.
Nice. We'll do it. So this week, we're doing a special wrestling-themed podcast edition of the Sega Nerdcast. So what we're going to be doing is going back and talking about how we kind of got involved into, you know, becoming fans of wrestling, and talk a little bit about that. We're going to go and talk about the famous and amazing WCW WWF Monday Night Wars, which was so much fun back in the day. And then we're going to talk about some of the games that came out during that era, which it pretty much was kind of like the late Saturn and Dreamcast wrestling games around then. We'll also talk about why there weren't any WCW games on the Dreamcast, because wrestling fans will know that that was severely lacking on the Dreamcast, which, me being a huge WCW fan, I was pretty bummed about. But going back and researching for this podcast, I was actually able to learn quite a lot about not only some of these games that were released on the Sega platforms, but also why the WCW games weren't released on there. But before we get started in all of that, let's go around the room really quick, talk a little bit about what we've been doing. We'll get into what we've been playing, and then we'll get into the meat of the show. So, Hugh, why don't you tell us about what you've been doing and maybe what you've been playing?
Let's see. Lately, I've been playing a lot of NES Remix Volume 2. I realize this is the Sega show, so I won't spoil it with too much Nintendo talk, of course, but NES Remix 2 is really a lot of fun, and it got me to go back and try a few of the games in the collection, like see if I could still play them competently. Like Metroid, for example, is in NES Remix 2, and the challenges for Metroid are pretty easy. I got through all of them, so I said, you know what, I bet I can still beat Metroid in under an hour. So I popped in my Metroid cartridge, and I did not get through it in under an hour. It was very embarrassing. I actually died on the way to fight Ridley, which I was very disappointed about. So I felt very weak. So then I played Legend of Zelda, and I did really great at it. So then I felt redeemed, I guess.
I've never beat Metroid either, I don't think.
Really? I mean, I've beat Metroid 100 times, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, had a NES when I was in junior high, and we had summer vacations. So you don't have a lot of games. You play the ones you have a lot, I guess.
Right.
And you don't have GameFAQs back then. You didn't have internet, right? You had worse than GameFAQs. You had, like, other kids or kids in the schoolyard who gave you bad information about games because they didn't know what they were talking about. So you go and try and find, like, secret levels in Zelda that don't exist, or secret levels in Metroid that don't exist.
If you shoot a sword at a bush 1,000 times in Legend of Zelda, a secret cave will open up and you'll get there and get a magical sword that will kill Ganon in one hit, something like that.
Yeah, the Metroid.
You want to see your entire Saturday night doing that?
The Metroid one that I remember was, you know, there's this little, like, I don't know what they're called, like little look like little flying crawfish. They're the things that just go left to right.
Oh yeah.
There's yellow ones and there's purple ones, and the purple ones you can kill, but the yellow ones you can't kill. And of course, the rumor was, no, if you get 255 missiles and you shoot 255 missiles at them, then they die. And I actually did try that. And it does not work.
I think the worst, like, school rumor I had was the whole thing about you could unlock Kazuya in Tekken 3 if you played, like, 1,000 versus matches in one sitting. And I actually tried this. And needless to say, I was not very happy with that person the next day.
Yeah, I remember those. Oh, go ahead.
Like, Tekken 3 is a great game, and I would play, like, 1,000 matches, like, over time, but I don't think I could take more than, like, 100 in one setting, I don't think.
Oh god, I remember there was something with Mortal Kombat 2 where if you played 100 straight matches in like two player versus mode, then something would happen. I can't remember what it was, but my cousin and I sat there for hours just sitting there playing it until we got there. And
it Pong. It unlocks Pong.
What's that?
It unlocks a Pong game.
Oh, so that was real?
Yeah, it's real. Yeah,
that's real.
That makes up for like all those horrible. I've seen Pong. I mean, this one I've literally seen. If you just leave the game running long enough, and I forget, I think maybe one person has to get like 250 wins in a row.
Maybe that's what it was.
It's some ridiculous number, and it's got to be like one person doing it. But I mean, I've seen it happen.
Oh wow! Because we tried it and it didn't work for us, and we were so mad. It was that was not fun. But yeah, I wanted to pick up
after 249.
Oh, we probably did. Damn. Yeah. But yeah, I've been wanting to play NES Remix too. The only thing that's been kind of deterring me is a $15 price. I thought it was a little expensive for what it was. I was hoping for maybe like $10, but yeah.
So yeah, that's what I've been playing. What about you guys?
Cool. Brett, what about you?
I have not been playing a whole lot this week because I work in retail, and it's the first of the month plus the 4th of July, and it drove me absolutely bonkers.
Oh, man.
What I did play was a absolute ton of Persona 4 Arena. I'm just kind of trying to get my groove back, trying to get hyped for Persona 4 Ultimax, trying to get some new mains because some of the changes they've made to my current main, Naoto, in Ultimax are not really good. So trying to learn Aegis, Chie, and Yukiko, and going pretty well. It's pretty fun. Also played a bit of Shenmue for Sega Addict's Shenmue Journey, which we talked about on our podcast last night. And that's going pretty well, although I'm kind of wondering if this game would really, like, if they re-released it, if it would really do as well as we hope it would.
You know, that's a good point, because that's a really tough game to go back and really get into today. I mean, there's so many really kind of out-of-date gameplay mechanics and things that you have to do that people today just don't want to do. Like, well, for the first Shenmue, you literally have to walk to everywhere you want to go in the game. They fixed that in Shenmue 2, where you could just go up and talk to someone, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, let me take you over there. I was heading that way myself. And so, for the most part, you could just go and talk to someone, and they'll take you wherever you want to go, and you don't have to worry about that. But yeah, for the first Shenmue, I mean, that was one thing that, you know, a lot of people today, with how you know, impatient and inattentive people are, you're right. I think that might be a big issue.
Yeah, it's like, and the controls, I personally don't think have aged very well either. They feel very clunky compared to, well, I hate comparing it to something on a PS3 like Yakuza, but they feel very, very clunky compared or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know if it would get the results we hope it would if it got a re-release today.
Yeah.
But it's been an interesting ride so far, because I haven't fully beaten the game before, and I don't think any of us have except for maybe Scotty. So this is a really fun way to have an excuse to really go through and really explore the game, because where I never really had time to in the past, and where a lot of us never really had time to in the past.
Yeah, I beat the first game. I was a big fan of that. You know, but I actually didn't end up beating the second game. I got really far into it on the Xbox, but I never finished it. So that's something that I've always wanted to do. For me, I've been playing Musha on the Genesis. It's the you know, the really popular, really, really super expensive Dreamcast shooter by Compile, who, man, they made tons of stuff. I want to say they may have did Golvelius on the Master System, but they're most known for their shooters. I mean, they did a ton of really great shooters. One of the ones that I was personally, you know, really liked a long time ago, before I even really knew who Compile was the Guardian Legend. I don't know if you guys played that on the NES. Really fun shooter back then. But Musha, man, this is the first time I've ever really played it. I've heard nothing but really great things from it. What else did they do? What was the one, oh man, the really popular Turbo 16 shooter? I have it right here. It's called Blazing Lasers. Blazing Lasers, yeah. Is what they did also. So, if you've ever played Blazing Lasers, it has the same type of elements. Like, great, great soundtrack. It has, really tight controls. The upgrade and power boosting mechanics in the game are really interesting. They're really fun. It took a little bit of getting used to. I didn't have the instruction book with me when I played it. So I kind of was trying to feel that whole process out, trying to figure out how the upgrade system works in the game. But after that, I was able to get my hands wrapped around it. And I'm on the last stage right now. I was able to make it to the last stage of the game. I think there's 6 stages in it. I'm not sure offhand. But, so I've been playing Musha. That's the Sega Nerds Game of the Month right now. So if you want to join in and play Musha with us, we hope you would do that and discuss it on the Sega Nerds forums. Some people don't know that you don't have to spend over $300 on Musha to get it for the Genesis. You can actually get it on the Wii Virtual Console for $8. And you can also get that if you have a Wii U as well. You can access the Wii Virtual Console store from there. I've also been playing a little bit of Shovel Knight when I can, because I'm having to fight my kids for control of the Wii U, because right now what they're doing is they're playing Mario Kart 8, and so it's really great. The off-screen TV mechanic or feature on the Wii U is one of the things I love most about it, because when my wife is watching True Blood, I can be sitting next to her with my gamepad in hand playing Shovel Knight or Mario Kart or whatever other game. I don't have to watch True Blood or any of the other ridiculous, like, Downton Abbey type shows that she likes to watch. So thank God for that. That's about all. I've been playing a couple weeks ago, last week, I went out to the Too Many Games Expo out in Oaks, PA with Blake from the site. We had a good time out there. We weren't able to get there. We got there pretty late, so we only had a few hours there, but we were able to pick up some stuff. He got some really good games. Got Moonwalker for the Genesis. He got one of the Mickey Mouse games. I think it was Castle Illusion he picked up. He picked up quite a bit of games. I was upset because last year I went, and there were a ton of great games, a lot of stuff that I wanted, and I had trouble finding, what I wanted to spend my money on. This year, there was just, I don't know what it was. I just couldn't find anything that really stuck out at me. I've been really focusing on my Dreamcast collection here lately. Wasn't able to really find much of anything there. I did pick up Outrigger for about $15 complete, which I was pretty happy with. I think that was a pretty good price for Outrigger. But other than that, I really didn't get much anything. I got Battlefront on the Xbox for my son. He's a big Star Wars fan, so we picked that up. But other than that, the show itself was fun. We sat in on the Game Chasers Q&A panel, which was somewhat entertaining. It was a good show. We're going to go back next year. Hopefully the vendors will be better. Oh, one other thing that I wanted to show you that I picked up is pretty neat. And we're going to be showcasing more of this on the site soon. It's called the Coconut Cape Caper. And this is a homebrew Master System game by a guy named Vince. And what's even cooler about it, it's not that he just makes the own game, but he literally manufactures everything. Like, he makes the case himself. And if you opened it up, he showed me. He makes, like, everything. He makes, like, the circuit board, all that. He assembles everything himself. And so I picked this up for $30 there on the show floor. And so we're going to be this is the second game. Last year I picked up Bread and Butter from him, which is another one that he did. And this is the sequel to that game. So we're going to be showcasing that on the site here in a few weeks. Let's get into some wrestling talk now. This is why we're here. So let's go around the room and talk about how each of us got into watching wrestling. Because I don't know about you guys, but I got into it when I was really young. But I want to hear from you guys. So, Hugh, why don't you start us off and tell us your wrestling origin story?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I had to think about it when you put this on the agenda. So, like, I was a kid in the 80s, and we didn't really, like, I grew up in this house where nobody watched sports of any kind. Not that pro wrestling's really a sport, but, I mean, we didn't watch anything resembling
We thought it was back then, though.
Well, that's where my story's going, is I was a kid, and if you'd asked me about pro wrestling, I probably would have assumed it was real. And I remember I was at school, so if this was around the time of WrestleMania 2, that would have been like fifth grade, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of guessing. I have to guess. I'll do some math here. So the kids at school were all talking about WrestleMania 2, and you know this is going to be Hulk Hogan's last match because King Kong Bundy broke all of his ribs. You were like, what's going on about this guy, King Kong Bundy? And I didn't really know who pro wrestling was, but of course I imagined this huge fat guy that ended up, well, I mean, when I saw King Kong Bundy, he looked like what I was imagining. And, you know, all the King Kong Bundy broke his ribs, and now he's going to wrestle him in a steel cage, and and it's Hulk Hogan's last match, and so on. And I remember thinking, like, oh, that's really cool. I got to go see WrestleMania 2. So I probably at some point told my parents, hey, I want to go see WrestleMania 2. And we might have had cable. We definitely didn't get pay-per-views. So I did not see WrestleMania 2, but a few weeks later, we had a videotape of it. So at the time, I was living in, like, middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. I mean, quite literally middle of nowhere. And we had a computer, we had an Apple II, and we had a VHS player, but we didn't own a legitimate copy of a single piece of software or a single videotape. I mean, I had Indiana Jones, like, on VHS, but again, it was like someone's, you know, handwriting on the tape. Like, that's just how it was. And there were shops, I don't know if it was like a shop in town or what, but there was some kind of network in middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, to get, like, you know, copies of tapes of things. So tapes and computer software, everything was bootleg. And one day, this copy of WrestleMania 2 just showed up on top of my VCR. So I watched WrestleMania 2, and of course, I thought it was great. However, I also came to the conclusion that wrestling was fake very, very quickly.
Oh, wow.
Because the main event of WrestleMania 2, I mean, even to a, like, 11-year-old kid, looks fake.
It's the blue bar cage.
Yes. The cage that looked like it was possibly metal, but I wasn't positive. But really, when, you know, King Kong Bundy, he hits his head on the cage, and then he's on the ground, like, rubbing his forehead, and then he stands up and he's bleeding. I mean, even 11-year-old me figured out what was going on there. But it was cool. You know, it was like, you know, good guys versus bad guys and action and all that stuff. And when we moved out to the Chicago area, now we actually got wrestling on TV. So that was the thing. Like, where I lived, you didn't get pro wrestling on TV. The only time I saw pro wrestling other than WrestleMania 2 was Saturday night's main event.
Mm.
If you remember that on NBC, yeah. Right? Because we got NBC. So once every 6 months, I could watch, you know, Hulk Hogan versus Paul Orndorff in the cage or whatever was on then. I think that was one of those matches, right, where they climbed the cage and they jumped out of the cage and their feet touched at the exact same moment, right? that whole one. And, you know, I moved out to Chicago. Now we had, like, a whole bunch of stations that had pro wrestling. And we got UWF, you know, like with, you know, Big Bubba Rogers and those guys. And NWA, which, of course, would later become WCW. And that was great. I really got into WCW, NWA, Mid-South, whatever, mm-hmm. at the time. And became a huge, like, Ric Flair and Four Horsemen fan and became a big hater of Hulk Hogan because I'm like, oh, this, you know, Ric Flair guy is way better than Hulk Hogan and all that. And kept watching pretty much all the way through the Monday Night era, which I know we're going to talk about. I think still think that's, like, the greatest era of wrestling. And then right around the time of the WWF merger with everybody, you know, they bought out WCW and ECW. I thought their product got pretty bad, so I stopped watching for a while. And also, I had kids, and my wife was kind of like, yeah, I don't want to be watching pro wrestling in front of the kids.
That was, yeah, during the Attitude Era. That was not kid-friendly whatsoever.
Yeah. And now, I got into it recently, and the reason I like watching it now is because it's all kids of wrestlers that I grew up watching. I mean,
yeah,
half the roster are kids of somebody, right?
Cody Rhodes and Charlotte Flair and all of them.
I just realized recently that Bo Dallas is Mike Rotunda's son.
Yeah, and Bray Wyatt is too. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Shit, I did not know that.
Yeah, Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas are brothers.
We just ruined Bray Wyatt for you.
This is like equal to the moment I realized wrestling was fake. So.
Yeah. I mean, Randy Orton.
Yeah.
The Usos.
Mm-hmm.
Roman Reigns is related to the Samoan. I don't know. His father might have been a little bit before my time. I'm trying to remember who his father was. He was one of the Wild Samoans, I want to say. And, you know, it's all those guys. It's a good time. So that's the short history of how I got into pro wrestling.
So these this generation of wrestlers is a little bit better than the era of, like, David Flair and that whole generation of wrestlers that came out.
Like, Great Ganya. And...
like, Charlotte Flair is Ric Flair's daughter. She's in NXT right now. And she is millions of times better than David Flair ever was already. And she's still in development.
That's hilarious.
Like, the thing I remember most about David Flair was when Undertaker beat him up before WrestleMania 18. Like, that's the thing I remember about him the most. That and the straitjacket.
I didn't know that he got beat up by Undertaker. That would suck. So, Brett, how about you tell us?
Well, it had always been, like, a mainstay, like, program in my family as a kid. Like, my mom... like, there was no, like, real, like, loyalty. My mom watched both of them. She was a big fan of Bret Hart and The Undertaker, but she was also a big fan of, like, Sting and Luger and Nash and all of them. So it was always on no matter what company it was. And I kind of got, I was always, like, interested in what was going on because, like, well, Bret Hart was, like, was my favorite as a kid, mainly because we had the same name, same initials, basically. And I always, like, kind of watched and enjoyed it.
Brett the Hitman Hatfield.
So. Yeah, basically. I always wanted to believe I was named after him. That turned out I was named after a baseball player. But in 97, it was 97, right in the middle of, like, the NWO angle and all that, we were in Charleston for just a day out. Family day out, go to the mall, all that. And we went to an Outback Steakhouse outside the mall, and Randy Savage and Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect, walked in. And I walked up to them, and they had, like, a billion, like, friggin' kids' menus and crayons on their desk. I don't know why. It was
Randy Savage was eating the crayons. You know, he's a kind of guy that I just imagine is never out of character. Like, I completely believe who his character was, that was who Randy Savage was all the time. Like, I don't believe that was a character at all. I think that really was Randy Savage.
When I talked to him and got his autograph, he was using the Macho Man voice. Like, he was on. Oh, and, God. One of the waiters, like, got him to do the ooh, yeah, and I lost my mind at that point. And... that day, like, they were, like, in there, like, promoting Nitro or something, and I was like, Mom, Dad, we gotta go to Nitro the next night, and we ended up going, and I was hooked from there. It was during the NWO angle, so, like, you had, like, Crow Sting, which was the best Sting, I think. You had, like, the Cruiserweight division going crazy, like, Chris Jericho.
That was amazing, the Cruiserweights were great.
I got to see Chris Jericho versus Alex Wright, and that's what solidified, like, Chris Jericho is one of my favorites.
I was a big Alex Wright fan. I liked Alex Wright.
Alex Wright was awful.
Das Wunderkind.
Like, his dance is still, like, one of, like, my trademark.
Yeah, that like, little, like...
Yeah, still do it at weddings and stuff,
Oh, my God.
That was hilarious.
Oh, it was so cool. And, like, Sting wasn't there, and I was kind of disappointed. Then Randy Savage, like, did a promo from the crowd, and I was freaking out because, like, oh, that's the guy I just met. That's awesome. And I started out being, like, a huge WCW fan, basically. And then about, like, after the finger poke of doom, basically, like, after all the stuff with, like,
right.
Nash beating Goldberg and everything, I kind of started gravitating towards WWF and DX and all of them, and that's where my allegiances, I guess, lied for throughout the wars there.
Mm-hmm.
I watched them through 2004, and then it became the Triple H show, and I kind of fell away from it for a couple years, and then Chris Jericho came back, and then CM Punk debuted, and... The Miz, which I don't know why I was initially drawn to him, but they pretty much got me back in, and watching. And I've been watching again ever since. I've been getting... I haven't been watching as much WWF or WWE lately because some of their direction has not been good in my opinion, but I've been watching a lot like Japanese stuff now. Like my favorite promotion right now is New Japan Pro Wrestling, which they've been on fire since 2012 with Kazuchika Okada, Hiroshi Tanahashi. There's been some guys from the States, like Doc Gallows, the guy who used to be Festus in WWF. He's went over, he's reinvented his career. AJ Styles, who's in WCW and TNA, he's went over, he's reinvented his career.
Oh, wow.
It's been some of the best wrestling I've ever seen recently. Like Shelton Benjamin, guys like them, they've went over and like reinvented themselves, and it's been incredible to watch.
Hmm.
But yeah, that's basically how I got into it, and like that's basically my history.
Cool, yeah. So I grew up down in Texas, back in the early 80s is really when I first started watching wrestling. And I don't remember exactly how I got into it. I just remember it was always there. And it's probably a product of being kind of the middle child. I had an older brother who was about 5 or 6 years older than me. Had a lot of cousins. We were always really close, but they were kind of a lot older than me as well. And so I was always just kind of doing whatever they were doing, and they would always watch wrestling. But I remember... This was before I really got into WCW or WWF. It was WCCW, World Class Championship Wrestling, which was down in the Dallas area. This was the time of the territories, and so down in that area was the Von Erichs were really big. The Freebirds were really big. That's when Flair was the NWA champion, so he would come through. This was when WCCW was part of the NWA. Before they split off. Also, Chris Adams was a really great wrestler who I really loved. He was an English guy with the awesome super kick before Shawn Michaels had it. So I watched WCCW for quite a long time, and then I started getting into the WWF, WCW times. But it was funny that you mentioned that you were able to realize it was fake early on, Hugh, because I was not able to do that. I remember being up really late one night, and I was really young. I was probably about 5 or 6 years old, and I completely believed that wrestling was real. And I just remember there was a guy in the ring. I don't know who any of these people were, but he was doing a promo. And all of a sudden, a bunch of guys ran into the ring with aluminum bats and just started beating the living daylight out of him. And there was blood everywhere. And I was sitting in my room just crying. Like, I thought that they were killing this guy. And I was just bawling, like, late at night by myself in my room. I was just crying, like, why is anyone helping him? And so it was – I don't even remember once when I realized wrestling was fake. But I know that, as I got older, I mean, it was always a part of our lives. WCW was really, our favorite promotion. Pretty much, once it started getting – big, and even then, I mean, Sting was one of our favorites. Flair, like you said, the Four Horsemen. I loved Arn Anderson. He was one of my favorite wrestlers. But, at that time, I also watched WWF, too. I mean, I loved the Ultimate Warrior. He was one of my favorite wrestlers. The Undertaker, I was a huge fan of. And then it got into the Monday Night Wars, which we'll get into a little bit more. But I was really big into that, and I was huge WCW fan. And I don't know if you guys remember an old manager. His name is Gary Hart. He was
Playboy Gary Hart.
Yeah, and so I worked at a grocery store when I was in high school called Winn-Dixie, and I ran the dairy and frozen food area, which was great because when I came in after school, I would kind of relieve my manager, and he would go home for the day, and so I would just pretty much had no supervision, and you give like a 16, 17 year old kid no supervision, you just kind of hangs out. I really didn't do much work there. But there was this old lady that came and started working there in the department. Her name was Twinkle. I started talking to her and getting to know her, and I found out that she was Gary Hart's wife, and they ended up getting a divorce. And so I started like talking to her and getting to know her, and she told me all these really great, awesome stories just about her time touring with Gary Hart. They're really good friends with Ric Flair, so she's doing all these just like crazy backstories about Flair and everything. So it was a lot of fun, like talking to her and getting to know her and kind of hearing some of the behind the scenes aspect of the wrestling business before there was any, you know, like the internet was really big and you could kind of hear, you know, all the dirt sheets and everything else before that time. So that was kind of that for me. But let's get into some of the Monday Night War now. I mean, this was back when, you know, the NWO first started getting big. The Outsiders came over from WWF and, you know, started really making waves and really turning the wrestling business on its head. And really, I mean, WCW got really close there to, you know, putting the McMahons and WWF out of business. So what do you guys think about that? I'll put that to you. Can you kind of talk us through your experiences with that?
Yeah. You know, the weird thing for me was I was such a big WCW fan. Like, that era of in WWF, like 94 to 96, was kind of like debatably worse than, yeah, I don't know, 2001 to 2005 WWF. And this was like, I think, the bottom of their barrel, so to speak.
The new generation era, I believe.
Yeah.
Where it was like Repo Man and guys like that.
Right, and Doink the Clown. I think Doink the Clown is when I stopped watching WWF entirely for a while. You know, once there was literally a clown character, I said, that's it. I'm going to stick with WCW. So I remember when, like, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash showed up. I knew Scott Hall. I knew Razor Ramon. But I really didn't know who Kevin Nash was. I remember that reaction. Like, okay, well, that's Scott Hall. But who's the other guy? You know, and it hadn't really even occurred to me that, oh, that guy was just, like, WWF champion recently.
All that matters is he was really bad at promos at the time, and he didn't know what an adjective was.
Right.
Look at the adjective, play.
Yes, so that was kind of the thing. Like, you know, I knew it was something big was going on, so I started poking around the internet because back then you had like Usenet and like wrestling chat groups, and I started reading like what was happening and the whole story of, you know, WCW decided to get more aggressive about buying out WWF talent. I mean, they had already had Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage at that point. But it was weird because neither of those really felt like a huge deal, I guess.
Right.
Really the first, you know, they signed over Lex Luger. I guess the formal start of Monday Night War was the first night that Lex Luger was on WCW again. But yeah, you kind of felt like those were, you know, I'm not saying washed up, but they were on, you know, the decline of their careers, right?
Right.
You know, but that was because the official start of Monday Night War was that the Mall of America episode, first time they aired directly against WWF, and you know, Lex Luger had the surprise appearance, all that kind of stuff.
And like that is what started WWF putting in 90-day no compete contract clauses in the contracts now. Like, somebody can't go, like, from being on a WWE show and then going, like, straight to, like, say, New Japan or TNA the next night and having another Lex Luger or Rick Rude situation or something like that happen.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I mean, Rick Rude was on both shows at the same time.
Right. That was mind-blowing for me as a kid. Like, wait, wasn't he just, what? What's going on? Mommy, help me.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was, you know, but Scott Hall and Kevin Nash were sort of like at the, I guess we'd say the peak of their careers when they jumped over. And the next wave of guys they signed over were generally guys more on the upswing of their career. Maybe, you know, Bret Hart would be, Bret Hart may be a little more debatable. I mean, Bret Hart had been wrestling a long time. He was, you know, clearly the top star when they signed him over, but his career fell apart pretty quickly after that, but that could have just been WCW not using him well.
Right.
You know, and Goldberg almost taking his head off in a match because it didn't help either.
Yeah, that's... thinking about that's making me sad. Because, like I said, Bret Hart was always my favorite as a kid, and, like, the way his life went after Montreal is just one of the most... I don't know if we're going to get, like, too deep into Montreal later on, but, like, the turn his life went after that incident between what happened with Owen, the stroke, the concussion, all that, and like his family just going bonkers as well. I feel horrible for him because like you'd think like the villain in that situation, Shawn Michaels, he got to end his career on his own terms in an amazing way in an amazing match with The Undertaker. Bret Hart got his head kicked in by by Goldberg, mm-hmm. and didn't get to end his career on his own terms. And that's really sad to me.
Yeah, although I think he is on Raw tonight. I think he's actually supposed to be appearing.
Because they're in Montreal, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know what he's going to be doing. I mean, he can do a couple spots. He can go out and punch a guy, I guess, but maybe he's just doing...
Put somebody in the sharpshooter. Or it could be Damian Sandow dressed as him again.
Yeah, they might do that. He's got
that impersonator gimmick.
Yeah, so during this whole Monday Night War era, like I kind of knew a little bit about what was going on with WWF because a lot of my friends were really big into WWF during that time, but I was really focused and pretty much, I guess you could say, a WCW fanboy back then because I was like really I hated on WWF. And one of the fun things that we did though is every pay per view I would get about 10 to 12 of my friends over, and we'd all chip in like $5, and we'd be able to pay for the pay per view that way. And my parents were cool with it, so I was able to get every single pay per view back then, and that was a lot of fun. But yeah, the what the NWO ended up coming in and doing was really awesome, and that really created some like must see TV with what they did. But I always thought that they just made a really big mistake of just adding too many people. Into the NWO, because it's got to be this point where every week is like, okay, who's going to join NWO now? And, you know, and they brought guys like Virgil, and, you know, it was like, what is he doing in there?
And it got to the point where, like, their entrances, like, at the beginning of the show took, like, 10 minutes because they had so many people, and they had, like, the entire ring filled with just people, like, two-sweeting and everything before anybody even talked. And it took, like, 10 minutes just to get to that.
Yeah, I remember during this time, I remember it was a big deal because Vince Russo ended up taking over the head writing duties later on into like the WCW run there before it went under. And one of the cool things that Vince Russo did, though, is that he opened up questions or feedback from the community, and he would, you know, supposedly he would take all this feedback and implement some of the stuff into the you know, the writing and some of the creative process. So my friends and I were so big into that during our breaks at school, we'd get on the internet computers and we'd send in like thoughts and ideas and all these like stories that could be implemented into it. And one of the big things that I really wanted them to do, and I still think it could have been pretty cool, this was after the whole NWO run. I wanted it to go away towards the end just because it got to be so dumb. I thought it'd be really
2000.
Oh god, I thought it would be really cool to have kind of like a an old generation versus like the new like generation coming up, like that they were trying to take over and like really cement themselves with that, and like the guys like Sting and Ric Flair, some of the old timers that have been there, could kind of fight back against them, and you know, you could create this really neat like feud with some of the young guys and some of the older guys. And so that's what my big, you know, story process was. And I wrote like tons and tons of, you know, really detailed stuff and sent it into to Vince Russo. And I had all these like, you know, ideas of grandeur that, you know, what it could do. And we'd sit there and just talk about, you know, what could happen and everything. And obviously, you know, nothing like that ended up coming to be. But for a while there, I wanted
now,
to be...
Did you send him the Marcus Spagwell's mom on a pole match? I think that was one of his.
I don't even remember that. What happened with that?
Spagwell on a pole. My God.
It was a match where somebody had kidnapped Buff Bagwell's mother or something. I don't remember the whole storyline, but I just remember the match was, she was in a cage on a pole hanging above the ring, and you didn't... I forget the winner... I guess got her. I don't remember the whole.
I think it was Rick Steiner. I don't know why.
Yeah,
I could see Rick Steiner totally doing that.
Judy, that's the first thing that comes up on Google. I have to, it, no, it was a Beth Bagwell versus Canyon.
Versus Canyon.
Who's
yes.
better than Canyon?
No.
Everyone.
Oh. Oh man.
But yeah, yeah, and I don't know if it was actually. I assume it wasn't actually his mother. I assume it was who's the guy, the comedian that does all the big Madea movies? It was like someone like
Tyler Perry.
Possibly. Thank you. And of course, Buff Bagwell, if you haven't heard, is a male escort now.
Yeah, I saw
and
that.
He busted out a Canadian destroyer. Like, he still wrestles, and he busted out a Canadian destroyer in a match recently. Which, if you don't know what the Canadian destroyer, I can't talk. Canadian destroyer is, it's a flipping pile driver, like a standing flipping pile driver. It's
oh, wow.
one of the coolest moves ever. And friggin' Buff Bagwell pulled it out, and it looked beautiful.
Back when he was, before he was Buff Bagwell and he was Marcus Alexander Bagwell, I always thought he was thought he was a really good wrestler back then. Like, I always liked him as Marcus Alexander Bagwell. I thought he was great. Yeah.
He kind of got into the same problem with Scott Steiner, though, where he bulked up too much. Like, clearly WCW didn't drug test. Those guys are both examples. Like, they got huge, and then they had almost no mobility anymore.
And that's the thing, yeah. I mean, Scott Steiner was really well-known for his mobility. I mean, the Frankensteiner was amazing. I always loved that. I mean, he was kind of what was a... I don't know what the other name for it. It wasn't a Hurricanrana.
Yeah, I think it was Hurricanrana.
It was? So, yeah, but to see him, I mean, because he was still, when he was... when they were the Steiner brothers, I mean, he was still pretty muscular, but this was before, you know, Big Papa Pump, and, you know, he just started going, you know, completely roid rage. But, yeah, I mean, I thought he was great back then. But I remember when Rick Steiner broke Bagwell's neck. You remember that when they I was watching that match, and I was like, oh, my God, like, we could tell that something was bad. My God, he killed him! yeah, so...
And then Bagwell came back and he did that heartfelt, tearful promo. And then he stood up out like the wheelchair and started doing his dance and everything. It's like, ah, I'm kidding you.
Yeah, and then but man, so one of the great things, and it's kind of really got me back into wrestling now is the WWE Network. So you can go back and watch, you know, all these old pay per views. They don't have the old Nitros up yet, but I'm going to be really excited once they finally get them up. But so, you know, once I subscribed day one to it, and I really started going back and watching some of these old, pay-per-views, because I have a lot of nostalgia about them, and I really enjoyed them. Worst idea I could ever have done. It's a terrible idea to go back, because going back and watching only makes me realize how bad the product was back then. It was... so bad. And I started watching some after I stopped watching wrestling, because once, pretty much like around the time WCW got bought out is when I stopped watching around that time frame. Because then I ended up going to basic training. I really quit. But I started watching more stuff around that era, and it was just so, so bad. And I watched the Invasion pay-per-view. Do you guys remember that one when it was like the big build-up? When they had the WCW wrestlers come over into WWF, and they also had the ECW guys. But, they had some of the worst WCW guys come in and wrestle. I mean, it was Chuck Palumbo was on that card. They were the WCW tag champions.
Yeah. Oh, well, God. The story behind that is that all those guys, when Vince bought out WCW, all those guys still had contracts with Time Warner. So to get them over, he would have to buy out their contract. So guys like Hogan and Nash and even Ric Flair, you know, these guys had multi-million-dollar contracts. I mean, Hulk Hogan's contract might have been more than what Vince paid for the WCW, right? Because he got it for peanuts. So he didn't want to pay off those contracts. So the only guys he could get to come over were like Booker T was the big name he could get. He wanted Booker T, so he signed Booker T.
Like Diamond Dallas Page, like he took his contract like pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
Like, he got shafted pretty badly.
Yeah, but he just wanted to work, right? And Chuck Palumbo was probably cheap.
Yeah. He paid
Lance
to be there.
Lance Storm probably cheap.
Oh, yeah, Lance Storm was there, too. Oh, I love Lance Storm, too. So, yeah, that was, fortunately, I mean, the Monday Night War was one of the best eras of wrestling. I think we can all agree on But towards the end there, it was just, it got so bad. I mean, yeah, WCW just ran it into the ground. And they always say, you always hear about the inmates running the asylum, and that's really what ended up happening. I mean, WCW, they really started signing all these guys to these terrible contracts where, I forget what the technical term for it was, but it is essentially like, Kevin Nash was a big one. Anytime they sign a new guy that would have paid this new guy more than Kevin Nash would to be paid, his contract would escalate up to meet and match that person's contract. So yeah. They signed a lot of guys to these type of contracts. So these contracts were constantly ballooning, and they had all these budget problems. So it was just really poorly run.
And then they let Kevin Nash have the book.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that too.
And like the best thing that came out of that was that episode of Thunder he commentated, I have to say.
I don't remember that.
It was hilarious. Like I'll have to send you guys a video or something after the show. He basically... It turned into the ultimate... It was basically a shoot. It was hilarious. Man. Like they had a video package of, like, Goldberg versus Sid. And he narrated it like he was, like, the Crocodile Hunter or something. Or, like, National Geographic.
Oh, God.
And it was actually really funny.
Oh, awesome. Man. So let's get and talk a little bit about some of the games that came out during this era. So we're going to start off with the games on the Saturn. There's not really a lot out there. They started kidding about in 96. So this was, this was around when the Outsiders were coming through? Or was that more closer to like 97? I think it was about then, right?
Yeah, no, I've got an outline here. So... There were two Saturn games, right? One of them came out before The Outsiders. I would call it a pre-Monday Night War game because it has Lex Luger in the WWF still.
Yeah. It has,
the Narcissist? Was this when he was still the Narcissist?
He was in the American... He's wearing the American outfit.
The Lex Luger.
Yeah.
So this is like when he was around the time he was feuding Yokozuna then?
Yeah. During the time. And then... Scott Hall and Kevin Nash appearing on Nitro was May 27th, 1996, and the next Saturn game that came out was November, December, like late November, early December, Christmas time, 96. So at that point, you of course, if Hall and Nash were planned for that game, you know, because game development starts, you know, quite a bit ahead of time, they would have been pulled out, right?
Yeah, they would have been dummied out.
Yeah. So
why you get to play as Ahmed Johnson.
Yes. So the two games we're talking about, of course, are WWF WrestleMania, the arcade game, and the sort of sequel to it, WWF In Your House, because these two games basically use the same game engine.
Mm-hmm. And they were those, it was digitized characters, so it was somewhat like Mortal Kombat. And they're very arcadey, so it's not anywhere close to what your typical wrestling game would have been like at that time.
Yeah.
Right. And like anytime somebody got hit, like their Bret Hart's glasses would fly out, or like Shawn Michaels, he would have like broken hearts that flew out of him, or something with blood. And like Undertaker had a fatality in WrestleMania the arcade game, and that carried over to WWF In Your House, where everybody had a fatality, which they called them super pins, because you can't really say fatality in an E-rated wrestling game. But they all had like these ridiculous finishing moves, like Goldust would turn his opponent into an Oscar. I'm trying to think. Ultimate Warrior would like shock somebody to death, Raiden style, stuff like that. It was quite the sight to see.
Now, I had a lot of fond memories of WrestleMania the arcade game. I remember playing in the arcades, and I played it on my Saturn, you know, back in the day, and I really enjoyed the game. I thought it was really great, and it was just really fresh. You know, like Midway developed the game. Sculpture Software did the console ports on the WrestleMania arcade game, and so it made sense that it had that kind of digitized style because Mortal Kombat had that back then. Yeah. But it was just felt very fresh. It was very fun. But going back, I was playing In Your House this past week. And wow, we got the 32X version.
Yeah, I was gonna say, of every game on Sega consoles, the 32X WrestleMania the arcade game is the one I played the most by far. Just because it is so much fun.
Did that one have any like anything different than like the Saturn versions or anything?
No, it's just you know what it is? Genesis controllers are better than Saturn controllers. That's really all. Yeah. It's like the Saturn version looks better. Obviously the load time isn't great, but the it looks better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now, the third one is you can just pop the cartridge in, the game starts right away, and you can use the Genesis arcade pad. And it's just fun. That's really all I can say. It's the most fun game on the list.
I need to play that with my arcade stick later on. Like, try to get that running somehow.
Yeah, and apparently the for the WrestleMania the arcade game on the Saturn and PlayStation ports didn't have in-game music. I'm not sure about the 32X version. So that was one of the things that was stripped out. For that one. That's the game that I really remember back, and I think back fondly of. In Your House, not so much. I mean, like we mentioned before, we had the British Bulldog, Ahmed Johnson, Hunter Hurst Helmsley. So the roster wasn't, I didn't think, was nearly as iconic as WrestleMania the arcade game. And so, going back and playing In Your House, I was not that impressed. I didn't think... The matches were very fast. They were over, it seemed like, just in a matter of seconds. Like, your moves would just do so much damage.
There was no balancing in this game.
Not at all.
Yeah. It was a very weird experience. So, to me, I put my notes here. Like, this to me is the low point of WWF represented in game form. It was kind of the bottom for them. And I know, like, you look at the list, there's some big names, but you got to realize, like, some of these guys were not... big names yet. Like, I mean, you have Triple H, but he's doing the original Blue Blood gimmick. Shawn Michaels was still kind of the boy toy gimmick. You know, well, this isn't DX Shawn Michaels, right?
Yeah, this isn't like Boyhood Dream Shawn Michaels or anything like that. It's still Shawn Michaels.
Right. It's still that, like his, his match, because the In Your House, the matches all take place at the wrestlers' houses, in quotes. And Shawn Michaels is like in a beauty salon, to give you an idea. And you're right about the matches being short. So the first match I played, I was playing as The Undertaker. And I was wrestling Ahmed Johnson, and I won the first round. In the second round, we're wrestling, and he either threw me out of the ring or I hit the wrong button, and I went out of the ring. So I'm standing outside of the ring. Ahmed Johnson runs back and forth a few times, runs out of energy, falls over, and I won the match. I wasn't even in the ring.
That sounds like the real Ahmed Johnson. This is a very
realistic. Yeah. That'd be a great gimmick for them to do in a match now. I'm trying to think who's like the biggest, most out-of-shape guy in WWF today. But, yeah, he runs back and forth and just collapses. So
I was about to say Roman Reigns, but no. He's – no.
That'd be hilarious. And this is probably towards the end of the Ultimate Warrior's run in WWF too, wasn't it?
It was – he had come and gone a few times, right? Because when I put this in, I completely slipped my mind that he was in the WWF.
This was like when he – like beat Triple H in like 12 seconds at WrestleMania, and like he no-sold the pedigree, which we pretty much accepted as the point where Triple H decided he was going to bury everybody if he got the chance.
Oh man! And so the only other game that there was a bunch of Japanese exclusive games because during this time wrestling was big in Japan, so you had the All Japan and some of the Fire Pro. I think there were some Fire Pro games on the Saturn, but one game in particular that I just want to mention because it was something that I, in doing some of the research on the show, I thought it was pretty neat. All Japan Pro Wrestling featuring Virtua was published by Sega in 97, developed by Scarab. Now, one of the neat things about this is it actually featured Jeffrey and Wolf from Virtua Fighter. There were some bonus characters that you could apparently unlock. And it also had some American... wrestlers, which are staples of Japanese wrestling games, like Stan Hansen, Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Johnny Ace.
Johnny Ace!
Yeah.
People power.
Big in Japan.
I think he's going to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame this year, right? Johnny Ace?
I hope so.
Just kidding.
I would go for that ceremony. Absolutely.
And so this kind of leads us, this is around 97, and this leads us into the Dreamcast era, and there were a bunch of there were several WWF releases, some ECW releases, but one of the things that was a very that noticeably absent was There are no WCW games on the Dreamcast, and there's a reason for this, because Acclaim was the big WWF developer back in the day, and this dated back, I think, during the NES days on the WrestleMania on the NES, was when they first developed a WWF game. So at some point around this time frame of 98-99, WWF switched to, I'm sorry, it was later because there were some Acclaim WWF games, but WWF switched to THQ, and WCW was also with THQ during that time frame. When WWF aligned with THQ, WCW switched to EA, to Electronic Arts. And then Acclaim went to ECW. Now, one of the things that everyone knows going back to the Dreamcast era was Electronic Arts didn't develop games for the Dreamcast. There was no EA games. So that pretty much killed any and all hopes for any WCW games on the Dreamcast. So we only have WWF and ECW games, which is a big bummer. But there was... I don't even know if there was really all that great WCW games on the PlayStation. The N64 had the bulk of those, right?
Yeah, like World Tour and Revenge and all that. They were incredibly good games.
Yeah.
WCW's games on the PlayStation were basically Thunder, Nitro, and Mayhem. And, yeah, they don't exactly hold up. I tried playing them last week just for shits and giggles, and oh my god.
The worst by far is Backstage Assault.
I've never played it, but I watched a video of it, and how did that even get greenlit? How did that even make it out of development?
Well, you like how I said, WWF in your house kind of personified the worst of WWF, like WCW Backstage Assault. Like, to me, that is the game that represents the Vince Russo era better than any game you could make. It's all gimmick matches. It's a roster that's not very strong, right? Because you had all the major stars disappeared at that point. And well, Vince Russo is one of the players you can play as in Backstage Assault.
There's one good thing about Backstage Assault. You can beat up Vince Russo.
You can do that. Yeah. But you're right. Like WCW NWO Revenge is a great game. I really enjoyed that one a lot. Super roster on that game. It just looks. I don't know what it is, but like the way it does like these cinematic shots. Like you'll be grappling, and the camera will kind of move to like a dramatic angle in the match, and it's really cool. I was very impressed with that one.
Which game was it that had like Sting actually come down from the rafters? Was it Revenge or was it World Tour?
I think that was... Well, Revenge is the later of the two.
That might have been Revenge then. I can't quite remember, but I remember, like, seeing that happen and being so mind-blown that they actually got that in instead of having him run from the back.
Now, the one cool thing about Mayhem on Nintendo 64 is it had a code feature where, like, on a WCW pay-per-view... they would give you a code, and if you entered that code into the cartridge, you would get, it would generate the pay-per-view that you were watching.
Huh.
Assuming the wrestlers in the pay-per-view were on the, actually in the cartridge, right? So it didn't work every time, but that was kind of the gimmick. You're trying to sell the game by like, well, you watch the pay-per-view and you enter this code, and you can recreate the pay-per-view.
I never knew that. That's actually really cool. I'm kind of surprised that WWE has not done that with the, 2K series yet. I feel like they would probably, like, they even, like, use, like, the 2K entrances and stuff for, like versus screens when, like, the pay-per-views are sponsored by those games. So I'm kind of surprised they haven't tried to pull something like that into, like, 2K14 or 2K15 or something like that.
I'm looking in published, WCW published codes for Spring Stampede, Uncensored, and Super Brawl 2000. This is all 2000 events.
Mm.
I don't know if anyone has hacked it yet to like come up with a code generator if you want to create your own codes for it.
I don't know if anybody ever stopped to have But, oh, man, that's really... I never thought I'd say something good about WCW Mayhem, but that's really, really cool. I never had any idea.
Yeah, that's the redeeming feature of the game.
And then you actually have to play the matches, and it's like, oh, this wasn't worth it at all.
Yeah, I mean, if you could do it with some of the other game engines, it would be a lot better.
Oh, definitely.
But
like the Aki engine, like they used for Revenge and like WrestleMania 2000 and all that. Give me that with that feature, and I will be in heaven.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you had that in WrestleMania 2000, that's another solid game. I'm just looking over at my collection right now, seeing if there's any others that were really memorable from them. But, yeah, WrestleMania 2000.
What I always liked about WrestleMania 2000, we've turned it into an N64 cast for a moment while Chris is gone. What I always liked about WrestleMania 2000, though, was how you could edit the wrestlers as well. Yeah. And this was in, like, all the Aki games, especially that one. Like, this was right around the time Undertaker stopped doing, like, the Ministry of Darkness thing and became the American Badass. Yeah. And that was really cool that I could go in and edit him to be current instead of keeping him as Ministry Undertaker. And that's something I wish they would bring back for the newer games as well, because, like, they put in, like, the Superstar Threads thing for, like, 2K14 and 13 and all that. But the problem is it only lets you edit the colors. It doesn't let you edit, like, hairstyles or attire or anything like that. So, like, when CM Punk shaved his head during his title reign, like, the later part of his title reign in 2012, you would still have to deal with, like, long-haired Punk. But you could, like, remake his Yankees attire or something like that. But it would still be, like, long-haired Punk with the original Best in the World shirt from 2011. And it's like, that's kind of lame. Why don't you just go the full, like, let us edit everything? That would be awesome. I love that about WrestleMania 2000, though.
Yeah. I'm looking at a FAQ right now on WrestleMania 2000, and there must be well over 100 create a wrestler.
Oh, definitely.
Because they have a list of, like, how to create every wrestler from that era for all major promotions.
And, like WrestleMania 2000, like, No Mercy and all that, they're still kicking today. Like, there's people who do, like Hackett, where it has, like, current rosters, current themes, everything. It's amazing to see that game has lived on as long as it has.
Yeah, I haven't followed the hacks on that, but you mentioned, like, the soundtracks and stuff. Like, one, if you ever want to have kind of a bad time, take the Saturn version of WWF In Your House and pop it in an audio CD player, because you get all the music from the wrestlers, but then you also just get, there's like 99 clips of just Vince McMahon saying wrestlers' names. track 49, it's just Shawn Michaels.
Shawn Michaels.
So if you want clips of, you know, if you want to do some sort of mashup of Vince McMahon saying wrestlers' names.
Oh, you've just given me the best, worst idea.
You can do that. You got all these great samples of mid-90s Vince McMahon.
I'll make it to where Vince McMahon is singing Shawn Michaels' theme.
You might be able to mix that up, because you can get Shawn Michaels' theme on there.
Oh, man. And then I will hate myself eternally for ever doing something so truly evil.
Well, and that was the downside to, like some of these Dreamcast games that we talked about. I'm kind of weird this way. Like, every CD game I get, I pop it in my CD drive to see if it has audio tracks.
Right.
And PlayStation was sort of like the last system you could do that with. Saturn, just about every game had the audio on, you know, on the CD, like Redbook audio. In PlayStation, sometimes it's Redbook audio playing off the CD, and sometimes it's, like, you know, a PSF file, right, which you obviously can't play in a CD player. But the wrestling games on PlayStation, none of them can you get the audio off. It's a real letdown.
Yeah, because, like, there's some themes that were, like, never released on, like, official albums or anything, like The Rock's 98 theme, which I consider to be, like, the second best he ever had. It was never released, and for the longest time I could never find it. And I always wished I could have ripped it off of the Attitude disc, but it was never.
Yeah, it's true. Attitude, so getting back to the topic, like, I played WWF Attitude a bit. And I did like that it had good entrances. I didn't use the Create a Wrestler mode. Did you try that?
Yeah, I used it all the time. Like, I was putting, like, Tekken characters in there and everything. And they looked awful, but I was really young at the time. I was like, close enough. This is awesome. I can see Kazuya and Jin in a wrestling ring.
Yeah.
And then, like, I gave him, like, the worst, most unfitting voices I could and kind of ruined the illusion. But it's terrible by today's standards, that creative wrestler system. But back in the day, like especially after playing Warzone on PS1, it was phenomenal at that time. Because, like, it was terrible looking, but you could, like, add text to your wrestler. You could control their voice, their, like, every part of their entrance, everything. And it blew my mind as a kid. Like, now I can look back and be like, this wasn't great.
But yeah. I never really haven't gotten around to trying that mode on any of these games. And that's shame on me, but it would probably be fun. But I don't have a lot of time to sit there and be like, okay, well, you know, how do I create Akeem in...
Yeah, that's the same thing. Going back and playing these, I didn't really bother too much with the creator wrestler, but I remember back in the day, it was a lot of fun to go back and when you had tons of time, you could sit there and you spend, you know, 3 or 4 hours creating wrestlers from different eras and from different organizations. But I didn't, I didn't go back and do that much either. But I don't know. Going back and playing most of these games, I have to say I wasn't that impressed with really any of them. I don't think they hold up very well at all. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I had some fun with ECW Hardcore Revolution. That one was, I actually thought, a decent game.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great game. I did get my oldest kid to play it with me once. So we tried it. She didn't know who any of the wrestlers were. She is sort of a... I mean, she knows who, like, the Undertaker in Triple H is. That's about it. But you get into the roster of ECW Hardcore Revolution, and that's like... This is really diehard wrestling fan.
Oh, yeah.
The only person here that maybe anyone recognizes is Rob Van Dam.
Either him or, like, Tommy Dreamer. And that's very borderline right there. Like, again, like, there's, like, Too Cold Scorpio and Big Vito. Who the fuck are these people?
Yeah. Yeah.
Axel Rotten.
Yeah. Balls gnarly.
Like, yeah.
The best part about ECW Hardcore Revolution are the female entrances, like Dawn Marie, because she comes out and she tries to look really like the sexy entrance, where when she comes in the ring, she bends over and shows her butt, like, to everyone. But it's just this big polygonal mess of, like, flesh-colored, you know, polygons and textures. It's so crazy looking. Actually, I did an Instagram video of the whole entrance a couple days ago, and it was so bad. This is like
watching that.
This was the epitome of, like, sexiness on the Dreamcast, was Dawn Marie's ECW Hardcore Revolution entrance, and it was bad. One of the things, though, that I don't know, like, I really didn't like the grappling system in the game. Yeah. I felt that it just wasn't that intuitive. Like, every time I seemed like we'd lock up, it would be, like, the same type of move where someone just, like, grabs his arm bars, or, you know, you throw your opponent's arm behind their back, and it's like the same thing that happens each time you lock up, and I couldn't figure out.
It was like the Chris Jericho school of wrestling games. Every other move is an arm bar. Yeah.
I couldn't figure out, you know, how to actually transition from the lockup to any other type of move. Anarchy Rules, though, changed that a little bit. I felt like I could do more stuff. I don't know what they were able to do, or if it was just the fact that I was mashing buttons, you know, better. But I was able to do a little bit more stuff when I played Anarchy Rules. But yeah, Hardcore Revolution, I did like some of the you know, things that you could do in it, some of the other modes and things like that. I thought that was kind of fun. One of the things I liked about, I think it was Anarchy Rules, was the fact that if you did, like, a barbed wire match, you would have, like, injuries or blood would show, like, in the same area where you would get hit. Like, so if they, like, threw you into the barbed wire, your back would have, like, blood draining down it, and your face would start bleeding and getting beat up. That was kind of a neat thing because you really didn't see that a lot in games that era. This was kind of the first time you'd start seeing, as the match went on, you would see damage.
That's a lot better in their first attempt with Attitude, because I remember when I had like blood matches in Attitude, they would start bleeding in the most random places. Like you would like hit somebody in the head repeatedly and like their leg would be bleeding. It's like, wait, what? What the hell? It was like, the first time I saw it, I was playing as Gangrel, and if you guys remember him, he was the vampire who spit, blood in his entrance. So I thought, wait, maybe this is, part of his attire now, because he did his entrance. I thought, oh, this is some cool revolutionary shit. I was like, wait, no, wait, he's just bleeding from his leg randomly. Okay, I'll take it, whatever, it's blood to video game. And I'm 10. Woo.
Yeah. And so it was notable that Anarchy Rules, I don't know if you guys said this when I popped out for a minute, but Anarchy Rules ended up being the last ECW wrestling game that was released before they went bankrupt. And, they eventually became a part of WWE, and they kind of rolled all of those games and modes into future WWE games. And so after Anarchy Rules, we went into Royal Rumble, and that was the last licensed wrestling game on the Dreamcast here in the United States.
That was the only one in the SmackDown style as well. It was like a more arcade version of the WWF SmackDown style.
And this was developed by Ukes. This was the game when WWF switched to THQ. So this was like the first. All right, this is THQ running this. So you guys like this game. Yeah, that's Hugh, you're holding up holding it up right there. So Ukes developed this game, which was one of my favorite developers back then because they also developed sort of the Berserk Guts Rage on the Dreamcast. I was a big fan of Ukes back then. Sega actually developed the arcade version of Royal Rumble as well. Or they published, I should say. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and it plays more like an arcade game. I mean, it's a little bit, there's some weird stuff in the game because you'll be playing and then guys will kind of run into the ring, like at random while you're doing a match.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you just kind of walk all the way to the other edge of the ring, they'll just kind of run around. Like at one point I was wrestling and the New Age Outlaws crashed into the ring and they just got up on the top turnbuckle and just jumped and dove into the mat.
That's right, yeah, because you could... When you select your character, I think depending on what mode you played, you could create a run-in partner, and you'd have a set of moves, you press the X and A button, and your partner would run in and perform some type of move. In that respect, it was really arcade. I remember I was playing against my son last night, and we're wrestling. We're wrestling in the ring, and then all of a sudden the screen just went black, and then we were all of a sudden. Like in some parking garage.
Yeah.
And we're just fighting there. There was no rhyme or reason for it. It just happened. And it was like, okay. And then, Mankind and someone else that were our partners, and they were just standing on the side, and you could just go and punch them, and they wouldn't do anything. They were just standing there. You could just go beat them up, and they would just, nothing would happen. It was really weird. But,
you could run over them with a shopping cart, because when I was there was a shopping cart in the side.
Yeah! Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Awesome. We're making this game sound a lot better, I think, than it is.
It's better than Attitude. We'll go with that.
End up being the best wrestling game on the Dreamcast.
Yeah, if you want WWF on the Dreamcast, get Royal Rumble. It's not great, but it's better than your other option.
Yeah, kind of a small roster compared to the other games. I mean, the one fun thing about ECW, again, is if you're really diehard wrestling fan, there's so many names. I mean, there's 40 guys in each game, and a lot of them are kind of obscure, but then there's guys like Tracy Smothers that have been wrestling for 100 years that you recognize.
New Jack.
You know, the bummer about the WWE Network is that you can't get a New Jack match on it.
Yeah, they've censored all of his matches and everything.
Matches out.
Yeah, yes. I can't remember what the exact reason was. I don't know if it was like a disagreement between them and him, or they just didn't want to license Natural Born Killers.
It was the music, because he had that NWA song. Was it NWA that did that song? I think it was.
think so. I'm not entirely sure.
But I mean, he had the song play through the entire match, right? And ECW never cared about life. I mean, remember, like, early days of ECW, Sandman was coming out to, Metallica, and Rob Van Dam was coming out to Pantera, and they didn't pay any of those bands. You know, they started ECW, nobody watches us. but then once they started to go national and got a syndicated deal, then they had to fix that stuff up. But
the only person they could get really that could license their stuff was Kid Cash. He was like a Kid Rock ripoff.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And that's what happened, yeah, in the Acclaim games, on the ECW games, they weren't able to use a lot of the interest music because of the same reason. I don't know if there's really too much to say about that. You know, it's kind of a bummer looking back that there weren't any of the, EA WCW games on there because, like we were talking about before the show, there was some really good WCW games on the Nintendo 64, like the WCW versus NWO, like Revenge, those type of games. They really changed up the combat system and the look and kind of feel of what wrestling games were. And I like that. I like those games. There weren't a lot of Nintendo 64 games that I enjoyed back then. I really just didn't like the system. But those WCW games were so much fun, and you could have like four players because the N64 had the four controller ports, and it was a really fun kind of party game that you get a bunch of friends over, especially big wrestling fans, and we just played those games all night long. They were great, and it was just a bummer that that the Dreamcast couldn't have something like that because EA wouldn't develop games for it.
When you were gone, we were talking about basically how the Aki engine from like Revenge, World Tour, WrestleMania, mm-hmm. No Mercy was one of the best wrestling engines, and like they did some of the coolest stuff that like THQ or not THQ, 2K won't do with the series today, mm-hmm. Editing wrestlers like I had mentioned Undertaker, like going from Ministry to American Badass. Like, you could do that in WrestleMania 2000, and you can't do something like that in the new games. That's really disappointing.
Yeah. I heard a rumor that Sting is supposedly going to be a part of the next WWE game. He's supposed to be like a downloadable character or something, or a pre-order bonus from GameStop.
Like, there was a big, buzz in, some of the dirt sheets and everything, because, they had, did a casting call for, an orchestra and somebody who looked like Sting, like a body double, and everybody thought, oh, this is finally going to be Sting's debut on WWE TV, because he'd been on the network a couple times, during some of the Ultimate Warrior specials and stuff like that, but he had never been on Raw or SmackDown or anything like that, and it turned out it was just for WWE 2K15, and everybody was super disappointed after that.
Yeah,
it's never happening.
Well, the problem with the Sting, appearance would be, if you sat there and you're like, man, there's so many matches I'd like to see Sting in, against guys who never competed in WCW, right? You make that list of guys who are just loyal WWF guys. And it's Shawn Michaels, retired. Steve Austin was in WCW and may have wrestled Sting at some point, but it wasn't.
But he wasn't Stone Cold.
It wasn't the Steve Austin we know.
Stunning Steve Austin back then?
Yeah. Fire the Hollywood Brawler.
Right, and The Rock, and you start listing them off. You're like, well, The Undertaker is effectively retired, and Triple H is sort of retired-ish, and so you're just like, there's nobody on the active roster that you're like, man, I'd really like to see them wrestle Sting.
Yeah.
Him and Ric Flair could do one more show? How bad would that be?
Oh, man. Well, Sting and TNA was not very good. He had a couple good matches, I remember one he had with Bobby Roode that was really good, but he is where he's regressed with age, and my big dream match was always Undertaker versus Sting.
Yeah.
And because how they were sort of similar, dark characters, although Sting was more hype than Undertaker as far as his woos and everything. And Undertaker was more a methodical character, but they had the dark theme. Mm-hmm. They were both like Undertaker did some stuff in WCW, but not as Undertaker. He was Mean Mark Callis. And, after he became Undertaker, he never looked back. Sting has been the one guy who never worked for WWE. And it would be like their two most loyal people, like, finally clashing. It would be such a great match in theory. But then you look at Sting and how he's regressed, and then you look at Undertaker, and he's still good, but he's so beat up now. Like, the broken hip, the broken knee, the messed up knees, the concussion. Like, he got a concussion, like, within 5 minutes with Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, and he was like, he spent all his match on that.
Anyone gets a concussion within 5 minutes of wrestling Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, but it's like, he's so beat up and, like, so old now, and it's like, I don't know if that match would live up to the hype in my head.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and I think, though, like, as a hardcore WCW fan from back in the day, I'm okay with Sting never coming and wrestling in the WWE, and I'm kind of happy that it won't happen, because it's like the one thing that's sacred, you know, that's the one thing that WCW will always have. Like, they'll always have Sting, you know, no one else, you know, everyone else kind of went back and forth, but Sting was always there. You know, you had Flair, you had Luger, Booker T, all those guys went kind of back and forth throughout the years, the Steiner brothers, you know, Benoit, those guys, but, you know, Sting was always with WCW, and he always will be, you know, and I want it to be that, and I think that is really the way I think would be the best way to end his legacy. It's just, you know what, he was WCW from the beginning, not, you know, and you know, when he got big to the end, and we'll just not, we'll forget about that whole TNA thing.
Yeah, well, so, yeah,
let's pretend that didn't happen.
Yeah. So, and he's 55, so you don't want to, you know, I mean, like, 55, I don't want to see him wrestle.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. It's, yeah, like, you guys, you know, Brett, that's a good point. He's just, I think it's just going to be a disappointment. It's going to be one of those things, like, you know what,
it's not going to be like Rock and Hogan, where, like, the match was actually pretty decent. It's going to be, like, you'll have that moment, like, you'll have that stare-down moment with, well, if the flashbulbs still were a thing, that flashbulbs popping, it would be so hype, and then the match actually started and be like, oh.
He would need someone young to be able to carry the match, but the problem is there's no one who I want to really see him work with who's a young wrestler. You know, there's no, like you said, one of those iconic wrestlers from back in the day that he would need to work with, and they're all too old because it would just be two old men in the ring. Just, it'd be bad. It'd be one of those, like, really old, like when WCW would just bring it back guys, like, out of retirement, and they'd have, like, these old, like, Chief Wahoo versus, like, Dusty Rhodes or something, and they're both, like, in their mid-50s, and it was just a really bad idea to do.
Or Hacksaw Jim Duggan in a hardcore match.
Well, or, you know, going all the way back, like, I remember as a kid when, you know, watching some of the early WWF, and Harley Race was, like, a regular guy in WWF, and he did not look good at that point. I mean, I don't know how old Harley Race was, but he must have had some hard living in there, because he was not in great shape, and I remember kind of thinking, like, should they be letting this guy wrestle? Like, is he gonna, he's wrestling, he did a feud, like, with Junkyard Dog, a guy 25 years younger than him, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And like, I kind of get that feeling with Undertaker now. Like, when I was watching the Brock Lesnar match at WrestleMania, it was like, I felt kind of sick seeing somebody that old and that beat up, like, knowing how bad a shape he's in, seeing him out there with a guy like Brock Lesnar, who's just, he's a beast. Like, that's not even just a character, that's just him. He's a freaking beast.
Yeah.
And it felt weird. And then the match ended, and it definitely felt weird.
So I think that's going to wrap up our discussion on Dreamcast and Saturn era wrestling games. I think in the grand scheme of things, when you look back at wrestling video games, this probably wasn't the golden age of wrestling games, you know, on the Saturn and Dreamcast. You know, there were a couple of decent games, but for the most part, just seemed like it was just a weird, it was a weird period for the, you know, Sega and, you know, wrestling games. Because, like we said, like, EA left, they had the WCW license. Acclaim really was just kind of grasping at straws with ECW. And then, you know, you had some of the WWF games with Acclaim and THQ. So, yeah, that's going to, I think, going to wrap it up. So, you guys, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit where they can find your show, Hugh. I know you guys just did your latest podcast, right? But that should be coming out some of this week?
Yeah, it'll probably be out on Wednesday. So every week I host the Retro League podcast. That's at theretroleague.com. And we just talk about old video games. Pro wrestling comes up very rarely. My co-host has never seen pro wrestling, I don't believe. But it's all video games on there. Sega, Nintendo, any video game from the 70s through 90s is something we talk about. We include Dreamcast on there too, actually. Dreamcast is like the official end of retro, as we've defined it, I guess. And yeah, every week, you know, video games, retro gaming community news, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I definitely suggest you guys, the listeners, go back and check out some of the past retro leagues, because they do these great series where, like, the most recent one, I think, was like exclusive series from foreign territories, like, so from Japan and things like that. And so they look back at, like, old, like, you know, Genesis stuff, like Dreamcast stuff, Saturn stuff that didn't make it to the States, and they kind of go back and talk about some of these games that we were never able to get our hands on unless you imported them or through other nefarious means.
We just finished our foreign exclusive series, and Dreamcast, Saturn, Genesis are all on there.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely check that out. Brett, you guys have been on the show before, but let us know how your guys' new podcast has been going, because that I think when you were on before, it was when you guys were first either winding down the Sega-centric podcast and coming into the new one, right?
Yeah, we were just getting the Sega Addicts After Hours podcast off the ground, so to speak. The original Sega Addicts podcast had just finished its run of 150 episodes, and they handed off the reins to myself, Scotty Moe, Stevie Grant, and our newest co-host, Thomas Avantis. And we just finished episode 18 last night. We're in the middle of doing the Shenmue journey, which is all of us playing through Shenmue, different sections of Shenmue. And we've kind of, like, you've got your Game of the Month Club and all of that. It's kind of in the same vein of that, where we're giving people, like, little sections to follow along with if they want to play along with us. We're just starting this too, so we kind of took a long break between our last Shenmue episodes, but we're going to make it more regular, and it's going to be fun. We also did a top five list of our favorite games, Sega games with guns because of America for July 4th, and then... And it's a wild ride. It's not quite as tightly produced as this show. It's a pretty wild ride, but it's a lot of fun. Hopefully you guys will come check us out. Our new episode just went up just this morning. After this show, if you want to check it out, it's on Sega-Addicts.com. Should be one of the first posts, and hope to see you there.
Awesome. Yeah, some of those podcasts I've been a part of, the some that just kind of go off the rails a little bit, and those are a lot of fun to be a part of, but once you go back and listen to them, you're just like, oh, man. I know some parts have been like that, just like really bad. Like, I kind of feel bad for anyone who's having to listen to this. So I'm sure your guys fared a lot better than some of ours have in the past.
We go so far off the rails, we go back on the rails again, like, as a full circle. It's not like railing it back on. So it's just like going full circle back on.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
So we have a big week here at Sega Nerds. Tomorrow is actually going to be a really busy day for us. Around 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, we're going to have Greg Johnson on with us. Of course, he's the co-developer of Toe Jam & Earl, which was our Game of the Month last month. We weren't able to get him on last week because there was some internet problems. But we're going to bring him on this week. We're going to do a Toe Jam & Earl retrospective with him, talk about the development of the game. And I'm going to play through Toe Jam & Earl as we're doing it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Have him commentating, telling me how bad I am at playing the game. It's going to be really surreal playing a game that I, you know, grew up playing. Toe Jam & Earl was a really important game in my you know, young years of video game playing. And having the man who created that game watch me and talk to me as I play it, and then, you know, commentate on it. It's gonna be a weird experience.
I would prepare for a lot of stage fright death.
That may happen. I won't deny that. Also, later in the day, we're going to have an interview with Roger Craig Smith, who is the famously the Sonic voice actor, but he's done a lot of other stuff. He's also going to be the new Batman voice actor in the new Batman Arkham game. He's a very traveled voice actor. He's done stuff in games for a long time now, but I think he's probably most well known for his work with Sonic the Hedgehog. So we're going to have him on. We're going to have an interview with him later in the day. That will be really good as well. So we're really excited for that. But you guys, I want to thank you for joining us on the show this week. I would love to do this again sometime. Maybe we can go back further and talk about some of the Genesis era wrestling games, or even earlier than that. I know there was
WCW game on Genesis, and I know there's a WWF Raw and Royal Rumble on Genesis as well.
Yep, in 32X, and there's a generic pro wrestling game on Master System.
Oh, there we nice.
Go. From their generic sports series, that they did.
I'll have to ask. We have Zachary on the site, runs Ages of Sega, which is this really neat series. His idea is basically going from the SG-1000 all the way up into the new era. So he's on SG-1000 games right now. I don't know if there's any SG-1000 wrestling games. Wow, I want to play those right now. See some WrestleMania, Genesis, and
I see Raw
on 32X.
I owned Royal Rumble for the longest time, and I sold it to buy Tekken 3.
And I've been trying to get WWF Raw on Sega CD, but Sega CD games are sort of aren't expensive. I haven't been able to get it yet.
Yeah, it's so hard because to get those games, you can't just stop into any, even retro video game stores now, it's tough to find Sega CD stuff. And even 32X stuff, it's tough. You got to really, we're looking for. And then eBay, those prices are getting out of hand. So, yeah.
Well, I'm always happy to talk about pro wrestling. So, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's been great. So that's going to do it for the show. We will be back next weekend for a regular Nerdcast episode, talking all the Sega news and all the other great stuff, and we'll have the rest of the team on. But that's going to do it for us. From Pro Wrestling Land. Take it easy and have a good week.
I'm the wrestling king, but now I'm spitting lyrics. Took a break from the ring, cause I want you all to hear this. Coming in a medium, nobody expected. I've been in the game for years and I'm still respected. Macho Man Randy Savage, the two keep warrior. Critics, I'm ignoring you, gelated to euphoria. In the streets say,
Randy, you the illest.
You're one of the realest, so it's not hard to feel us. People wanna know if Michael's still in the ring. People wanna know if Randy's doing his thing. Everybody's talking, wanna know this and that. So I'ma tell you right now, Randy Savage is back. People wanna know if Michael's still in the ring. People wanna know if Randy's doing his thing. Everybody's talking, wanna know this and that. So I'ma tell you right now, Randy Savage is back. With vengeance and got good chemistry. Me and Big 3 about to shock the whole industry. You can't believe Macho Man's really rapping. Hooked up with the Rascals, we made this thing happen. Hit the studio to get paid in full, and I can make power moves, I got a lot of pull. Every time I'm in the streets, people still show love. They wanna know what's going on, they wanna know what's up. People wanna know if Macho's still in the ring. People wanna know if Randy's doing his thing. Everybody's talking, wanna know this and that. So I'ma tell you right now, Randy Savage is back. People wanna know if Macho's still in the ring. People wanna know if Randy's doing his thing. Everybody's talking, wanna know this and that. So I'ma tell you right now, Randy Savage is back. I'm back on the block, but the product's changed. But the passion I possess still remains the same. I switch the game, I'm on a different plane. The first wrestling MC will be my claim to fame. I'm like Diablo and Mike, I can play two sports. And in both arenas, I'm a tremendous force. Cause when I fight or rip the mic, I ain't taking no slack. Back, I got the knack to entertain, so I'm back. People wanna know if Michael's still in the ring. People wanna know if Randy's
Savage back at ya. Got the Rascals in the house. Big K, Brian O, Ted, Romy Rome, and Old Chisel. Shout out Derek on the boards, Tommy Chisel, and Pinky. And I can't forget the Master of Disaster, the incredible Bill Edwards, and the entire Big Three crew. Oh, yeah.